Well, I want to talk a little bit about the role of elders. We are in the process of looking for additional men to serve as elders in the church here. And there are a couple of things that we need to always remember anytime we look at elders. Some of them are things that we don't talk a lot about. Some of them we do talk a lot about. The first thing that I think it's important that we remember is that the eldership is, and I couldn't find another way to say this other than it's a church locating. The sphere of the roles that they play is limited to the individual congregation. Now, there are some people who are described in Ephesians, the fourth chapter, that Jesus gives us that are a part of the functioning of the church that are not limited to a single church. The apostles, for instance, are not limited to a single church. In fact, the apostle Paul talked about himself, and he said he had the care of all the churches. So, in that sense, there are roles that are filled by men today, not by men today, but have been filled by men that were not church limited. Now, I say that because it's important for us to understand that in the New Testament time period, when these things were being written, this was the case. There are no apostles today. The age of the apostles has passed. It was for a period of time so that we could be given the New Testament. And once that's completed, then the age of the apostles has passed. I don't want to spend a lot of time trying to develop that idea, but I think that's an idea that everybody understands. Can somebody read Acts the 14th chapter and verse 23? And you see here an indication that the role that the elders play is limited to single local congregations.
When they had appointed elders for them in every church, having prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord in whom they had believed.
Okay, and this, when it says they appointed elders, who is it talking about? I'm sorry?
Apostles?
Yeah, it was Paul and Barnabas.
Oh.
Okay, so, the indication is that because they were ordaining elders in every church, that their sphere of operation, the sphere of their roles was the local congregation. And we could talk about that. That is an understanding of biblical information that is not shared, generally speaking, in Christendom. But I think it's something that's important for us to remember. The second thing that we do talk a lot about is the idea that when we talk about the eldership, we're talking about work. Can somebody read 1 Timothy 3 at verse 1?
Here is a trustworthy thing. Whoever aspires to be an overseer desires a noble task.
Desires a
Noble task.
okay, a noble task. That what translation was that?
NIV.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
So there are no elders emerita or emeritus. I don't know if you've been around people that have this emeritus title. That's a teacher who is not teaching anymore, but he still has an office. There, we don't have that. We're not talking about a person who has an office for life. Once you have a professor written after your name, you will always be a professor, even though you retire. That's not the sphere that we're talking. That's not the role, type of role that we're talking about when we talk about elders. We're talking about doing a task. Okay. And the NIV describes it as a noble task, and indeed it is, but it's a task. It's a work. And we talk about this fairly frequently. And I think we all understand that that's the case. Then I want to talk about the roles that elders played before they became elders. I want to talk about the role that elders played before they were appointed to be elders. And if you look at 1 Timothy and Titus, and you read through what Paul told Timothy and Titus about appointing elders, he talks about those men as having filled these roles. Now, a lot of times we say these are qualifications of elders. And that's a good way to think about it, but I prefer to think about it as roles that elders played before they became elders. And so I just outlined them the way that I see them. They are, in the first place, leaders in practicing hospitality. And they were leaders in practicing hospitality before they became elders. They didn't become elders and then become leaders in practicing hospitality. They were leaders in practicing hospitality. They were chosen to be elders because they were that, and now they continue to do that. Okay? Look at Romans 12 at verse 13. And this is why I say that they were this kind of people before they were elders. This is the expectation that's laid down for all of us who are Christians. Somebody read Romans 12 at verse 13.
Contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality.
Right, right. That is not a statement that's made to just elders. That's a statement that's made to everyone. They need to be leaders in practicing hospitality. In other words, if you were living in California and the big fires went through, you were the one who was saying, you were out there in front saying, come, stay with me at my house. I'll take care of you. Your house is burned down. You have no place to stay. Come, I'll take care of you at my house. You know, sometimes we think of hospitality as being a very limited thing. I have you over to my house to eat dinner. And we think of that as being hospitality. But in New Testament times, that was not what hospitality had reference to. It was caring for others. It was inviting people into your home, yes. But it was more than that. It was caring for others. And so, 1 Timothy 3 and verse 2, when the apostle is talking to Timothy about what kind of people you want to choose to be leaders, this is the way he said it. Can somebody read 1 Timothy 3 and verse 2?
The bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous.
Right. So he mentions this in the context of a lot of other things. But it's something that this person is a leader in doing. Okay? That's the kind of people that you want to look for to be elders. Not that they become this. This is the kind of people you look for. They need to be leaders in domestic life. And that's a pretty broad statement. Let's look at Ephesians chapter 5, verses 22 through 23. Somebody read that.
Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body.
Okay. And then chapter 6, verses 1 through 4.
Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with the promise, so that it may be well with you, and that you may live long on the earth. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up with discipline and instruction of the Lord.
Okay. So this is positioning fathers as being the leader in their home. And sometimes people enjoy a tranquil domestic life, but not because they're the leader. They enjoy that tranquil domestic life because their wife is the leader in the home. Now, that's not the way it ought to be, but in fact, that's the way it is sometimes. To say that someone leads their home doesn't necessarily mean, or someone enjoys a quiet domestic life doesn't necessarily mean that they are the leader in their home. And I'm sure that you have known families where the husband neglected that responsibility, did not take it on, and yet the family functioned well because the wife was such a good leader. Okay? So they need to be leaders in domestic life. And this is the way the apostle says it in 1 Timothy 3, verse 11. Somebody want to read that?
Women in like manner must be grave, not slanderers, temperate, faithful in all things.
1 Timothy 3 at verse 11, is that?
That's what that is.
That's what that is. Wrote down the wrong reference there, sorry.
12?
Yeah, what does 12 11? Say?
12 in verse 11. Is not lagging behind in diligent, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord?
No, that's not what I wanted. Let me. every once in a while you just write down the wrong thing. Let me look at 1 Timothy 3 very quickly. Sorry about that.
Probably 1 Timothy 3, 4.
Yeah.
Okay. What does that say?
He must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity.
Okay. That's the passage that I wanted. Can't tell the difference between 4 and 11. Okay. Sometimes our children are what God expects fathers to help create, but they are that not because the father had anything to do with it. They are that because of the mother. And that's not the kind of person that you want to look for when you're looking for someone to be an elder. The qualification there, that we sometimes get that kind of messed up. We say the qualification is that he have faithful children. But it needs to be faithful children who are faithful children because of his influence. Faithful children could be because of the influence of a mother. And that's what that we have to learn to differentiate that.
Or a grandmother like Timothy.
Or could be a grandmother like Timothy. Timothy was the kind of child that was evidence that he had this leadership in his life, but we don't know whether his father had anything to do with it or not. His mother and his grandmother did. Okay? So that's, you know, I don't know anything about Timothy's father or grandfather. But I know that he was a Greek. That doesn't mean anything. It just says that he was a Greek. And Timothy wasn't circumcised. So he wasn't a Jew of the Jews. So they need to be leaders in domestic life. That's what we would look for prior to them being elders. They need to be leaders in fervently serving the Lord. This is where 1 Timothy 3, verse 11 was supposed to be, not where I put 1 Timothy 3, verse 11. Look at Romans 12, at verse 11, and you see it's something that is applied to people who are Christians, not just to elders. Go ahead. Somebody want to read that?
Not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord.
Okay. This is everybody. This is everybody. This is the role that men should be filling before they become elders. And that's what we ought to be looking for. First Timothy 3 at verse 7 talks about being leaders in the community. Somebody want to read that?
He must also have a good reputation with outsiders so that he will not fall into disgrace and into the devil's trap.
Yeah. And, you know, I hate to say this, but I keep watching the confirmation hearings, and there are an awful lot of people who are suggested for different offices who do not have a good reputation in the community. And I don't know why they're suggested as leaders. But when we look for leaders to lead us, we need to look for leaders in the community. That doesn't mean they have to be politicians, but they need to be leaders in community. If I were to go into a community, if I were to go to pharmacists across the state of Oregon who worked for Bi-Mart, and I was to mention Ted Hodder, I know that they would speak highly of him. That's because he's a leader in that community. If I were to go to survey people in the manufacturing or retail field, and I mentioned John Hicks, they would say he is a leader in this community. Okay? And they don't become leaders in the community by virtue of being elders. They become elders by virtue of being leaders in the community.
Dean?
Yeah.
And they're not disqualified by anonymous sources. The person who speaks for him or against him needs to put their name on it.
Yeah, well, we'll talk a little bit about that when we talk about reproach. And you're right. That's true. That's a good point. We'll talk about some things that mitigate against becoming an elder, or mitigate against doing the work that elders do. But let's hold on to that until we get to talking about the factors that mitigate against. Okay? They need to be leaders in disposition. This is Titus, the first chapter, and verse 7. And he mentions different things here, but I think together these things point to a disposition. And an elder, when we start looking for elders, we start looking for people who are leaders in disposition. So Titus 1, verse 7. Somebody want to read that?
For the overseer must be above reproach as God's steward, not self-willed, not quick-tempered, not addicted to wine, not pugnacious, not fond of sordid gain.
Okay. So we'll lump some of those together a little bit later. But these need to be temperate people. That's a disposition of being temperate. A person who is not self-willed, as a disposition not to be that, but a disposition that is nonetheless puts them in the position of being leaders. And the best leaders are not self-willed. The best leaders consider not themselves, but they consider the good of whatever group of people they're leading. And we're going to talk about that a little bit next week when we talk about following Jesus. You know, Jesus wasn't the kind of leader who I read about these people in World War I that were involved in trench warfare, and you get the general who's in the back saying, "Over the top, boys, go get them." Jesus didn't say that. Jesus said, "Let's go." Jesus was right out there in the front. And that's the kind of leader that I think he's talking about. A person who is temperate, who is self-controlled, who is gentle, but nevertheless leads. I think they must be leaders in terms of generosity. And this is kind of related to the idea that they're leaders in hospitality. They need to be leaders in generosity. Look, somebody want to read Acts 20 at verse 35?
Everything I showed you, that by working hard in this manner, you must help the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus, that he himself said, "It is more blessed to give than to receive."
Okay, and we've seen this generosity idea included in the list of those things that Timothy was to look for in elders specifically. But they need to be leaders in these areas. They need to be leaders in skillful teaching. Remember what Paul told Timothy. He said, "The things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also." The indication is that Timothy was going to go out and he was going to help other people become skillful teachers. It wasn't just that he was supposed to teach. He was supposed to teach, but he was supposed to help other people become skillful teachers. And so that's the kind of leadership that we want to look for. people who are leaders in spiritual teaching. And 1 Timothy 3, at verse 2, he mentions it relative to elders. Somebody want to read that?
An overseer, then, must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach.
Okay. Able to teach. And so now my question becomes, as we conclude this part of our discussion, and we will go on and talk about characteristics that mitigate effectiveness. We're not going to have time to do that tonight, but as we conclude this part of our discussion, what kinds of evidence do you look for when you say this person is a leader in generosity? What kinds of things would provide evidence that that's the case?
Is he a servant, Pete? A person who's a servant? Is he?
Okay. So it would be. Now, the odd thing about this is a man who is a leader in generosity doesn't stand out in front and say, look what I'm doing. But it's like Dorcas. Remember the description of Dorcas when she died in the book of Acts? And the women came and showed the coats that she had made for them. That's how you judge somebody to be a leader. Not that they stand on the corner and say, look at me, what I'm doing. It's what they have done. You know, we talk about generosity, we talk about hospitality, we talk about being a leader in all of these things. Sometimes crises allow people to sort of stand out, or they push people to the front. There were no doubt people who had been opening their homes to people who needed help on a long-term basis before the fires hit in Los Angeles. But the fires hit, and these are the people who were kind of pushed out in front, although nobody may have known that this was something that they had done. Yeah, Carol.
And it's not just generosity with money. It's generosity with time. And
sure.
with action, the things that they do, you just look at that person and say, oh, it's wonderful. See their dedication.
Right. Right. It's the guy who shows up when a tree blows down on your house. It's the guy that shows up with a trailer and says, let me help you cut that up and put it in my trailer.
Okay. And then he goes and takes it to somebody who needs the wood for their heater.
Right. All these things build in together. Now, having said that, it's also possible, and we've seen it in our lifetime, in recent memory, COVID hit. And all of a sudden, you couldn't have people come to your home because you were worried about COVID. And you have to be worried about COVID. It's a dangerous disease. And so Tim has made the observation many times, since we've lived here, it was hard to get to know people because COVID hit right after we moved here. And it forced us apart in ways that made it difficult to see people who were doing this. You almost had to hide it. If you invited someone to your home for dinner, you couldn't tell anybody. And that's sad. But as I say, crises can bring this out in people, but it's somebody said a crisis never makes a leader, a crisis reveals the leaders. And there's a lot to be said for that. So what kinds of evidence do you find of these things? Especially because people that really are leaders do it very quietly. Nobody knows. So how do we find evidence of this?
Life doesn't happen in a vacuum. We catch people doing good things. And it's our, when somebody's looking for somebody in that situation, then it's our testimony that says, well, I saw this and I know this. So the testimony of others that create the goodwill that we know is there.
Yeah. Other comments?
I think you have to get to know the person.
You have to know the people. And something like COVID makes it hard to get to know people because we were forced apart, you know. And that's an unfortunate fact of life that sometimes that happens. Yeah.
I think I saw something this morning. You know, it was a case where an elder came up this morning and he was coaching and developing the flock. Tell us what we need to do. I think that's part of it.
I must say, you know, Ron Harrison was one of the people that when you came into the building, he was so busy visiting with people that it was hard to get Ron to sit down because it was time for us to start. And that's the kind of people that we ought to be looking for. So next week we'll talk about some factors that can mitigate effectiveness, and then we'll conclude by talking about some of the things that I see as roles after they're appointed to be and many of those roles continue, but there are some roles that aren't assigned to people who aren't elders. And so we'll talk a little bit about that as we conclude this discussion. Thank you for participating, and I know this is something that's important to us right now because of what we're trying to do. We're trying to look for men to serve as elders, and I think we need to constantly be aware that these are not the characteristics that people take on after they become elders. These are characteristics that they have and they have exhibited before they became elders. Remember, next week, Sunday night, we're not going to meet here in the building. It'll stink. And I don't think it's toxic, but it will stink. And so we'll be on Zoom next Sunday night at 4:00, and I'll send out a reminder notice. But somebody will probably forget, and they'll come down here to the building, and it'll probably be me. Just like I sometimes forget to turn off my phone, and my phone is the one that rings during worship, it'll probably be me. And remember, Monday night, starting tomorrow, we're going to meet at 7:30 and not 7:00. Okay? And we're talking about how we can change the format of the prayer list, and we may start changing up that format of the prayer list. So So look for that to be looking a little bit different tomorrow, and that's going to be good.